Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Karen Tynan, and I am the chair of West Coast OSHA Practice based in the Sacramento, California office. And here with me today is my usual partner, Kevin Bland, our Orange County shareholder. We cover the entire Western region for employers, and we're here talking about what we're seeing in Cal OSHA inspections and citations and how employers can strategize and prepare for the coming wave of citations and litigations. Are you ready, Kevin?
I am ready, Karen. It's great to be back.
Yeah. So let's start out by talking about where we are in the summer of 2020 with Cal OSHA inspections, Cal OSHA data, and COVID citations. What are we looking at?
Well, I've got some data that I was at the Cal OSHA Advisory Committee in which the chief was presenting. So this was data about a week old, I guess. But in the complaint department, they've had since February, since COVID started, and this is through data through July, and we're in August now, July 2020, 5,007 complaints.
Wow, received. Just on COVID?
Yes. And a complaint, so that you know in their terms, is an employee or a union representative calling. So it's an official complaint, what they call based on the labor code, in which they have mandate to investigate. Now, total complaints in the state are around 8,300 and change. So you can do the math on about 60% are COVID related.
Okay. And then were you able to get any other data about inspections or fatalities to kind of see where we are here in the summer of 2020?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. Imagine that. I have it right here at my bank. Same meeting, the Cal OSHA Advisory meeting. And as an aside, that's a meeting, Karen, as you know, that we're appointed to by the chief of Cal OSHA, in my case, way back in the Schwarzenegger days, in which it's a body made up of both management and labor. And I sat on it as a management representative. So we get a lot of good information early on. So that's where this information is coming from. So 538 on-site inspections have been conducted through July 2020. Of those, about 185 have been complaint-based, where they put boots on the ground, on 185 of these inspections. And so, as you can see, and to do the number, what are there, 250 inspectors statewide?
Something like that, maybe a little fewer.
Yeah. So, you can see the house thin air spread and trying to accomplish this.
And was there a particular focus on certain industries or information about the fatalities out there in industries? What'd you get out of that meeting?
Well, the focus, they have industry focuses for COVID. Okay. Now, fatality, injuries, or just COVID compliance. And it's a relatively short list, but it encompasses a lot of employers. If you look at it, it's and these are just in alphabetical order, no order of importance.
Okay.
But the ag industry, food processing and packing industry, grocery, hospitals, restaurants, retail, skilled nursing facilities, state prisons, believe it or not.
I haven't been to one, but
I'll stay silent on that issue. And warehouses. And interesting enough, this kind of mirrors a little bit of the people that are public facing for the most part. In a lot of these, except for maybe ag and warehouses, but a lot of goods and things transfer through those. And the other interesting point of, let's take ag and warehouses. There's been a lot of organizing campaigns in the history, right?
Right.
Of those industries.
So
there's a little tie in there.
Okay. Yeah. The unions may be using some of this as a complaint mechanism just to kind of use every tool in their bundle, right?
Yeah, possibly. I'm not saying that's fact. I didn't learn that. That's just my inference looking at this list.
Do we really know how many COVID fatalities we have in California workplaces?
Well, we do as of July, and 93 fatalities related to COVID. And when we say related to workplaces, those would be that have been reported to Cal OSHA as workplace fatalities. Now, whether they're finding at the end or not, that's yet to be determined. But for now, or at least as of a couple of weeks ago, it was 93 okay. statewide.
So less than 100. And in any typical year, I know this data because you and I have talked about it a lot. In any particular year, we're going to have 350 to 400 workplace fatalities in California, just based on the size of our economy, about one a day.
Yeah,
well, and yeah. Right, wouldn't you? And so what do you think of these numbers?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So like you said, if you look in like the total number through July of mm-hmm. fatalities in California has been 176. So about a little more than 50% have right. been COVID. So if the trend follows and the COVID fatalities fall on top of that, then we're going to see an increase in workplace fatalities through the year. But the interesting thing is if there's usually about 350 a year and we're about 176 as of July, including the COVID, we're really trending
right.
about the same
be, right.
With or without COVID, which right. is interesting when you break down. We'll see what the end of the year tells us, but it is definitely a number that's worth looking at with the number that's related to COVID fatalities in this.
Okay. And then lastly, I did want to mention something that I'm seeing, and you and I have had some calls on this, is the interplay between Cal OSHA citations and either PAGA claims or other kind of civil actions. Do you agree that that's a trend and likely to continue through the end of 2020? That's kind of what I think.
Yes, I do. And if you think about it, they're looking at every avenue in which to, lack of a better term, means in which to fill some of the void of employees maybe being off work or that are laid right. off or whatever during this pandemic, because we'll see the unemployment. Usually when unemployment goes up, litigation goes down in those areas. And this is a kind of a new mining field, so to speak, that we're seeing with some of the PAGA claims that are citing workplace safety issues. And then we'll see some complaints like retaliation complaints and cases in that arena. And then, of course, I know we'll get to this a little bit later, but there's other like serious and willful and criminal cases that come out of this arena, which is potential of any injury. But right now, there's a big focus on the COVID, right?
Yes, absolutely. So right now, I know we're doing a ton of advice work and we're dealing with a lot of investigations and starting to have 1BYs come down and looking at citations around the corner. What are some of the gaps and employer missteps that you think we should point out in this podcast that people could fix, that could be a good takeaway of an action item at their company?
Oh, sure. Well, think about documentation as one. And I just had this issue this week. The client is that they have the most incredible COVID information on their intranet site. Now, it's all great, and it's provided to the employees, and there's letters sent out to go to that site, and there's all kinds of hits on the site where you can tell the employees have been regularly referencing it. However, in Title 8 under 3203, the IIPP, how do you document your training? And of course, they're going to want to see training on your COVID prevention.
Yes.
How are we communicating it to the employees? You have to have the provider, the date, the name of the attendee,
right.
and the topic in which was covered. And so although the subject matter is well and probably an incredible top shelf training
right.
tool and probably used that way, but the document's going to fall short if they don't identify those factors that are required in the IIPP. And
yes.
so though that's an example of where your documentation needs to be tight and need to be following what the IIPP requires. And for like with training, making sure that you have all those identifiers on a document when they come back. One of the other issues that you're probably going to see in your record keeping and reporting, a 300 log, are you identifying the ones that are work related? There's a lot of controversy too between
you and I are smiling at each other over this. Yeah,
300 logs. So there's an interesting point to make. Because you have guidance on recording,
yes.
the 300 log, federal guidance,
yes.
and California guidance. Now, this is one regulation in all of Title 8 and all of federal OSHA that says the state must follow exactly. Why is that? 300 log data is something that's analyzed through labor statistics. And yes. So it has to be consistent in order to be valid. And so there's a lot of argument about, okay, well, California's guidance says this and federal OSHA yes. says this. My advice is go to the regulation and follow what the regulation says, period.
Just the plain letter.
Yeah, letter of the law, and follow that in making your determinations. And we'll see how this ferrets out. But that is something that's causing a lot of confusion in record. I probably get more recording questions, and you do too, I know.
Recording and reporting right now, I would say it's probably a question a day.
Oh, at least.
Yeah. And it is, like you're talking about, recording on the OSHA 300 log when maybe there's incomplete information. People are trying to figure out, oh, well, we're waiting for a test result from Bob in, you know, the parts department. And so he's quarantined, but does that count as a day away from work? And what do we write while we're waiting for his test? And, you know, it's just every possible scenario.
Right.
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 About that.
Well, and then when they come down, out, he's negative, but he's been off three days or 4 days. Basically a law school exam. And I think the point to this, Karen, is that everything has to be analyzed on its own merits. There's not going to be a black and white answer to all COVID cases are recorded or no COVID cases are recorded. They're going to have to be analyzed on their merits separately.
And in good faith.
And in good faith,
That's the theme I'm telling clients is take a look at your reporting and recording, make a good faith analysis in your determination, be ready to document your good faith analysis. Don't just kind of say, well, you know, Mary in HR kind of doubts that, you know, Bob really has COVID. Yeah. They think he just wants a week at the lake. That's not good enough, right? You need to document your fact finding, whether there's community spread, whether Bob worked with other people, whether we were social distancing in the workplace, all these other factors. So,
and balance that with privacy concerns and issues too, which is huge. So that's it. And at the end of the day, if you make a mistake on this, the ticket isn't that much.
The penalty is going to be less than $500.
Probably, maybe less than $1,000, I'll say, depending on it's a regulatory. It depends on who's writing it, right? But for the most part, in the grand scheme of things, monetary liability. And it's fixable. If you put something on that turns out, if your investigation, it turns out it's wrong, draw a line through it. You can correct. It's correctable. Right.
Yes. And that's another question we're getting is how to fix mistakes on the 300 log. So that's great advice, Kevin. We're starting to see, and you and I were just consulting about a BOI, Bureau of Investigation subpoenas, Bureau of Investigation inspectors out in the workplace. And I actually think this hasn't been talked about enough. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about how BOI gets involved and then darn it, how you got to take this seriously when BOI is involved.
Yeah, and what's BOI again?
Bureau of Investigation, Kevin.
So BOI, and I would say a little tongue-in-cheek because we deal with it so often that it becomes second nature. But the BOI, for those of you that aren't familiar, it's another arm of Cal OSHA within the Division of Enforcement that handles their criminal investigations. It's basically the criminal investigation unit. BOI sold.
Did you guys hear criminal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kevin said it twice. Yeah.
They're charged with doing an investigation separate and apart, but sometimes simultaneously and sometimes at the same place at the same interview together with Cal OSHA's enforcement arm, and then make a determination of whether they're going to turn it over to the local DA, district attorney's office, in their jurisdiction. Now, the issue becomes is what's the exposure there? We talked about not doing the 300 log, which we get a bunch of questions on, but I very seldom get a question on BOI and the fatality. Well, the exposure on a BOI case, the penalty for a corporation is $1.5 million per count. That's uninsured, no matter how you slice it, because it's considered criminal. And then court costs on top of that, so usually, depending on the jurisdiction, around 3.2 or 3.5 times the $1.5 million. And we're talking exposure. I won't get into the numbers, but let's just put it this way. We have a lot of success in this arena, but the exposure is huge. And why do you have success? Well, you handle it from the very beginning. As a criminal investigation, and have to recognize that. And a COVID fatality is a workplace fatality if this is what has prompted the investigation, and the BOI will more than likely be there. I can tell you just anecdotally, I've had 5 fatalities in the last 3 months, and every single one of those fatalities had the BOI involved. And probably all but one of those, the client didn't realize that the card that they got, one was from the enforcement officer and one was from the BOI inspector.
They looked the same logo.
Yeah, it just says Bureau of Investigation. And the one that did know is because they called 911 and then they called me. And so I was there to be able to explain that from the beginning, not to sound too cocky. But so I think it's a very important thing that sneaks up on employers. And let's face it, this is most employers, if they have one death in their whole existence, that's a lot. And so it's not something that employers go through and deal with often. And so usually it's the first time. And so there's a lot of unsuspecting pitfalls that come with the BOI being involved, and they don't realize that. Employers don't realize that magnitude of that.
Yeah. And I think that for the Bureau of Investigation, what you need to remember is the documents you're providing can contain admissions that would be admissible in court, right?
Right.
Against you. Interviews, you may be ending up waiving your Fifth Amendment rights, right? To self-incrimination if you make admissions to this BOI investigator. And I think another part for managers to think about, and I hate to admit that this has happened, but, you know, I have had a client that ended up with the ankle bracelet because of the criminal referrals and an aggressive DA who did not like that a fatality had happened in quick succession to another incident. And so you're talking about not only money, but personal freedom. And it's not to be underestimated, especially with community perceptions about healthcare facilities, meat processing, retailers, that a district attorney would necessarily turn up their nose at a criminal case served on a silver platter. What do you think?
No, the DAs have kind of caught on to these cases. I don't want to say they're easy, but they're easier than you think on their side and harder to defend than what you would think on their side if you don't know what you're doing. So I think that's very important to recognize in that context. The other thing is I want to mention the jail time. The interesting thing, and I kind of skimmed over that, if you are a supervisor, you're not a corporation. The supervisor has their own, and that's what,
Karen was talking about,
their own personal liability as a supervisor overseeing someone that ends up in a workplace fatality. The corporation, you can't put a corporation in jail. You can't put the company in jail. So that's where that divergence comes in with that.
But the CEO can have an ankle bracelet, the COO, right? The head of safety, if the DA chooses to be that aggressive.
Yeah.
Recently, you and I talked about a case. A client got a subpoena from BOI, and it was for a healthcare facility. And it was, I think, 25 items, Kevin. And it was, you know, everything from the janitor's job description on up, right? Yeah. And a client, when they called us, said, "Oh, I got this letter from this state agency." Well, it's not a letter, it's a subpoena.
Right.
Being careful and understanding the different state agencies in the process and what those state agencies are looking for, I think is probably a theme that you and I really try to hit on. And with BOI, I just think we haven't been talking about it enough and we need to talk about it more.
I agree with that. And then, sometimes people let their guard down. They've already done their, got their citations, and we'll get a subpoena for BOI because they have up to 3 years from the date of death.
That's important to mention. Yeah.
Yeah. After 3 years, and so the citations have been done. The worst is where someone doesn't have counsel and they say, "I'm just going to pay these citations. It's not worth the cost to defend these things. We're going to do it." Okay, now you've just made 90% of the DA's case that you can't unwind once they've been paid and done and not been appealed. So it's always these little things that need to be thought of in these contexts.
I like that. So yeah, you don't want to have findings of fact and conclusions of law that you've inadvertently agreed to. So last thing as we wrap up, I just want to highlight, and certainly people can go to our COVID-19 resource tab on the Ogletree website. We're seeing some claims for unsafe workplaces in the PAGA letters that are coming. And also, and I know this has happened in some cases for you and I over the years, Kevin, retaliation claims related to OSHA complaints. Employees have that right to complain to OSHA regarding retaliation if they bring up an unsafe workplace or a hazard that's unaddressed. So please be wary of that, and that retaliation can be incorporated into a single plaintiff case. And then, interestingly enough, the last kind of interesting claim that Kevin and I are seeing is this public nuisance claim, where it's related to workplace safety, and the plaintiffs allege that a public nuisance is created. There was a case out of Oakland recently that made the news on that. So be aware, be strategic, and definitely try to keep an understanding of how these Cal OSHA violations and citations can interplay with civil cases. So thanks for listening to Karen and Kevin. Look out for our blog articles on ogletree.com. We have recorded webinars related to COVID-19 on that resource tab. We also have a few other safety podcasts. We've got a primer on Cal OSHA. We've got an accident and fatalities podcast. We've written a few articles since March, since all this happened, some good resources for you guys. So take care and stay safe.
Stay safe, everyone. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.